The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors. Your source for everything paranormal. Para-X.
This is Elizabeth Saint. You know, in my journeys, I've confronted an over 1,000-year-old demon from the depths of Shepherdstown. But then, you know what happened? I came across Mike and Dave. And hot damn, nothing could have prepared me for the Odyssey Files. My second favorite radio show. I love you guys.
Kim, what are you doing?
Well, I'm telling Mike and Dave, it's time to get on the show.
Oh, well, the Odyssey Files starts now.
Para-X, it is 7 o'clock Central Time on Monday, March 11th. I had to look at that for a second. I am your host, Michael O'Neill. With me, as always, is my wonderful co-host, Mr. Dave Sawyering. Back from his week off, day off, whatever you want to call it. He's got the kiss hair going right now.
Just need the makeup and we're all good to go.
Yeah, pretty much. So, good evening, Dave.
Yeah, good evening, Mike. How are you?
I'm, for whatever reason, like, I was doing good, like, right up until, like, 5 minutes ago, and now I'm like, what? I'm, like, wired. I don't know.
Sweet.
Well, I think I'm just...
Go ahead.
Oh, I was saying, I think I'm super excited about this show, and I have no idea why.
Yeah, that's good. That's what I was just going to say. Maybe it's tonight's topic that's got you all pumped up.
It is. I mean, it's not like it's. I don't want to play down the topic,
right?
Because it's an interesting topic,
right?
But it's one of those. I don't know, but it's definitely an interesting topic. I don't know if that's it. Maybe I'm rested like the first time in years.
That could be it too.
But
maybe you're excited because there's no snow in the forecast this week.
That could be it. Rain. But I'm all right with rain.
I'm okay with rain. Yeah.
Because Saturday was wonderful enough to, I mean, even though it got above freezing, that still didn't stop it from dumping 8 inches of snow on me.
Right.
So that was fun to shovel the driveway. You know, it's probably time to get a snowblower when you can shovel. Cause my driveway is what would you say? 50 feet long, something like that.
Yeah. Roughly. Yep.
Roughly 45, yep. 50 feet long. It took me maybe 20 minutes, 25 minutes to shovel, 48 feet.
Yeah.
And then another, 25 minutes to shovel the last two,
yeah.
Thanks to the 3 feet of ice and compacted snow, thanks to the snow plow.
Right.
I think if I pay taxes, I think that they should have to not only plow the roads, but they should have to plow the edge of our driveway that they F up for us.
I agree.
I mean, because if they do road construction and it takes your driveway out,
right,
they have to repair it.
Right.
So if they mess up the end of my driveway with snow, they should have to remove the snow.
Well, you know, and I ran into that exact same thing today because one of my clients who can't walk hardly at all, even with her walker, she takes little itty bitty tiny baby steps. They had a path cleared for her from her house today when I went to pick her up, and the snow plow had just gone through. I saw it down the road ahead of me. And when I got there, I kid you not, like you just said, there was a 2-foot wall of just huge chunks of ice and hard packed snow. And basically, we all just stood there and looked at each other because, I can't grab a shovel and shovel it. And the client obviously can't. And the staff, I mean, it was a mess. It took like 20 minutes to get her on the bus. So, but we got it done. But I mean, it was just a mess.
Yeah.
Stupid snowplow drivers.
Yeah. They
do a great job. Yeah, they do a great job. I mean, I give them that. But I agree with you 100%. Something needs to be done with the whole, like, clog up my driveway right after I just get the thing clean.
Yes. So, topic tonight.
Yeah, topic tonight. Not snowplow drivers.
No, it is definitely not snowplow drivers and why they exist. Right. This is a topic that you came up with, and I don't know why it hasn't occurred to us. I mean, we're going on two years now.
Yep.
2 year anniversary in a couple weeks, and this has never. I think it's come up, but we've never talked about it really. And
yeah, not in depth. Anyway,
no, not in depth. And that is the history and the concept of the Dybbuk box.
Yay, Dybbuk box.
Said nobody ever.
Exactly.
Unless you're like...
Except for Zach. I think Zach said it when he acquired it recently. I think he went, yay, Dybbuk box.
Maybe. I just hope, I seriously just hope that it brings him such awful luck. And I'm sorry to say that. And if that taints my soul, I'm okay with that. But... yeah, the original Dybbuk. See, that was a misconception that I had. I thought a Dybbuk box was a broad, generalized term, and there were lots of them. You know?
Exactly.
And what I came to understand is there isn't. There is one.
Right. One original. Yeah. Yep.
One original. And I know now it's kind of a broad term.
Right.
But like, nobody, obviously Dybbuk is a historical term. I mean, it's in folklore. You know,
in Jewish, like, in Jewish folklore. Yep. Yep.
Yep. But nobody had said the word Dybbuk box until 2002, I believe.
Yeah, I found 2001.
2001.
But yeah, we're right in the same neighborhood. I mean, from when he acquired it.
Right. And I guess that's how far behind I am on the curve when it comes to that. But the Dybbuk, obviously, from Jewish folklore, and this was, again, another misconception that I had, because before I did my research, I was with Josie and Scott, my team, this weekend, and we were discussing the show we were going to do tonight.
Yep.
And I had said that a Dybbuk was like another word for a demon.
Right.
And I was wrong.
Right.
So just so it's not just me talking here, why don't you tell everybody what a Dybbuk actually is?
Right. Well, I'm with you. So when I had first kind of thought of this, and right, you know, almost 2 years, and we've never brought this topic up. I know we've mentioned the word, but we never really talked about it. So I too thought that like a Dybbuk box was basically like a demon's box, you know, or a devil's box. To me, that's kind of what the first thing came into my mind. But it's not. From what I found is that a Dybbuk is a human spirit, but it being human, it can still be malicious. But as a human spirit that can haunt and possibly even possess you, because it has something to accomplish. It's believed to be a lost soul, and that it needs to atone for a sin before it can move on. So in my thinking here, the term possession, you know, it's not like a demonic possession. It's more like a, hey, I need to atone for this sin. I need to borrow your body, right? I need to atone for this sin, so I'm going to do it through you, kind of, you know, whatever that atonement might be. I would imagine that there would be like a specific thing, you know, it wouldn't just be like I have to explore and figure out what my sin is. I think it would be something like they knew what their sin was and they had to atone for that but they could only do it if they could get back to the living. It's kind of how I looked at it. So,
yeah. I mean, obviously there's a lot of different, I shouldn't say a lot of different, but there are different takes and, analyzations of what a Dybbuk is.
Right.
Obviously Dybbuk is an ancient Hebrew word meaning to cling.
Correct. So which makes sense, right? I mean, because, you know, if you've got something that's and I read that too, you know, is that a Dybbuk is something in traditional translation would be something that would be attached to an object.
Yeah. Yeah. So basically what I had read, they had phrased it as the soul becomes trapped in an object.
Yeah. Yep.
And it needs someone, I guess it doesn't matter who, to help release it.
Correct.
But, you know, and one of the things that I read was, how do you do that? And I guess it didn't, you're not supposed to open it. That's bad.
No, that's bad. And a lot of people have opened it, so that's really bad.
Yes. Well, I mean, if you want to, because there's been people who have bought it who wanted to study it.
Right.
And, which, stupid, but, you know, I understand. It's just one of those things where you have to open it. But the thing that I read on how you, I guess, release it or whatever, one of the things they said was to burn it. And if you try to burn it, it will take an awfully long time to burn. And it will release the Dybbuk so they can't go back in the box.
Right. But then what are you accomplishing by that?
Yeah.
That almost sounds to me like burning a Ouija board, you know, like, so if you've got an entity attached to a Ouija board and you try to burn a Ouija board, I have seen a Ouija board burn, and I kid you not, it took forever. And the colors that came out of it and the flame height that came out of it was pretty crazy. I'm not saying that I'm not saying that it was anything, but it was certainly not what I expected to see off of burning a piece of wood. You know, it was something much more than that. So that's all I can really say about it.
You know what's interesting on that? What we could take from that is that spirit energy is highly flammable.
Yeah, but it takes a long time. Highly combustible, but extremely long burning. It's the next fuel source.
That would be
right?
Sweet. Solar energy.
I didn't say that. Sorry. If anybody's in my room listening, I did not say that. We're not going to start burning dead souls as a fuel source. That'd be it. I'll be terrorized tonight now.
If you are, let me know. We'll talk about that next week.
Next week, right, exactly. So how was your week-long sleep paralysis event? Oh, yeah, wonderful. Oh, sure, yeah, it was great.
Well, Dave said it, not me.
Yeah, exactly.
Just want to make that clear. So now that we have established what a Dybbuk actually is.
Right.
Why do we care? And the story that I read, and I mean, obviously I'd heard the quote unquote rumors of, you know, it brings bad luck and it does this and blah, blah, blah. Absolutely had no idea at all what the story actually was. And I think that I even saw, the show, the Paranormal Witness did one of their episodes on the Dybbuk box.
Okay.
And had Kevin Manis, who it wasn't the original owner, but that's who coined the phrase, you know, Dybbuk box back in 2001 when he acquired it.
Right. He was the original, not the original owner of the box. That was a woman, I believe, of Jewish descent, from what I saw, a survivor of the Holocaust that had passed away at 103 years old.
Correct.
But he was the original person to acquire the box outside of the family.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And once he, what's funny, and this should probably have been his first clue that he was up for something bad.
Right.
When he realized that, this box might be. It was just this wine box, closed, you know? When he realized the history of it, he wanted to give it back because he figured that to the family it was going to be like a deep sentimental value. And right. Like, no, take it.
Yeah, no. Get off the property. We don't ever want to see it again. Congratulations on your purchase.
That should have been his first gin right there.
That would have been my first clue, too. I'd have been like, okay, thank you, I guess. I don't know.
So the reason why he bought is he's an antique store owner, you know, so he refurbishes stuff. And he originally bought it as a gift to his mother.
Yep.
I don't know why that makes me laugh, but... I'm totally tarnishing my soul this episode.
Yeah, you are.
So he refurbished it a little bit. I mean, cleaned it up.
Yep, cleaned it up. Yep.
And I don't know if he. Yeah, he just started. He didn't refinish it. He just cleaned it up, and then he gave it to his mother. Gave it to his mother as a birthday gift, and so he hands this thing to her, and. From what I read, he got, before he did, while he was cleaning it up, he got, a phone call from one of his employees saying that somebody, was in his workshop or in a store.
Yep.
Throwing stuff around and swearing up
yep.
a storm.
Yep. Cursing and throwing things around. Yep.
Yeah. And, he went to check it out, and from what I believe like nothing was amiss, but that employee quit, never came back.
Yeah, from what I saw or what the research I did, that all of the light bulbs downstairs were broken out in the workshop area, and that there was an extremely strong stench of cat urine.
That's right.
Yeah, and there were no obviously there were no cats in there, so that doesn't make any sense as to why it would smell like a year old litter box that hadn't been changed, you know.
And oh, that's why I didn't see it. so then he gave this box to his mother.
Yep.
And got called away. He left. He left.
No,
they were going to go out to lunch.
They were going to go out to lunch. So basically he presented it to her and he sat it down. And then something happened where he had to go back and talk to an employee or a customer or something. And then when he came back, his mom had already been afflicted.
Yes. He had found her in sitting in a chair, expressionless, crying, and totally unresponsive.
Yep.
When rushed to the hospital, she was found to have had a stroke.
Yep. Major one.
To the point where she couldn't speak for a while.
Right.
But she could spell out words. And the first word when he asked how she was doing, she spelled out no gift.
Yeah.
When he said he'd given her a gift, she emphasized hate gift.
Hate gift. Yeah.
Hate gift. Being the wonderful family man that he is, he then gave the box to his sister.
Yeah. Nothing like destroying your whole family, right?
She kept it for a week and then gave it back. He then gave it to his brother. And his brother's wife, they kept it 3 days and returned it.
Yep.
And the brother said that it and this is one of the things that I've heard about this thing, is it will either smell like jasmine flowers or the smell of cat urine.
Right.
And
so that, you know, I would think that the smell of cat urine would be you're not the right person to help me. And the smell of jasmine flowers would be you're somebody who can possibly help me. Right? Because wouldn't it make sense that it's like drawing you, you know, to the box? I mean, because the smell of jasmine smells beautiful.
Yeah, I probably have smelled jasmine. I wouldn't be able to pick it out.
Right. Well, you would know that it's a pleasant smell compared to cat urine, though.
Well, yes, very much
right.
So.
Right. So
what I find funny, or actually funny, interesting about the brother and the brother's wife, he smelled the jasmine flowers. The wife right. smelled cat urine.
Right, exactly.
So, I don't know. Is it a thing of the sexes? I have no idea. But,
well, I don't know because Kevin smelled cat urine when he went downstairs. So,
Yeah.
Right? I mean, so his brother, but his brother smelled jasmine, so I don't know. It's interesting.
But then not wanting to be outdone and keeping it in the family, he then gave it to his girlfriend.
Yeah.
But you would think that at some point in time, it would have dawned on him that maybe there's something wrong with the box.
Well, you know, I was just thinking that, and I just jotted a note down as you were talking. So if you, okay, so you get the Dybbuk box, right? And you bring it back and you're going to clean it up and then, and make it, you know, presentable as a gift to your mom, right? So if you go to, okay, so you got it downstairs, you leave, an employee who runs, basically runs out of the building and quits, tells you that there's somebody swearing and throwing stuff around down in the basement. You go down there and all the light bulbs are blown out and it smells like an ungodly stench of cat urine. Why would you think that that would be a great gift for your mom?
Maybe you know? You attribute it to the box.
Well, it was okay, but then using common sense, I mean, he must have brought like a dozen things home that day, and maybe he couldn't attribute it to which one it was, right? I mean,
it's
I don't
possible.
Know. If you got 20 things sitting in a room that have been sitting there for a year, and you bring one new object in, and all hell breaks loose, I'm going to attribute it to the new one item that just showed up.
Yes.
At least initially.
You always have to go back to what changed at the time the activity.
Right. Of the activity started, right.
Yes. So, Kevin
maybe
gave it.
Maybe he didn't like his mom. I don't know.
Well, she did call it a hate gift.
Right. And he gave her a stroke, you know. So, I mean.
Pretty sure that was, you know, at worst, icing on the cake.
Exactly.
So Kevin gave it to his girlfriend.
Yep, gives it to his girlfriend, yep.
And she came back to him and said, you need to sell this. And he sold it to a middle-aged couple. And 3 days later, found the box sitting on his doorstep of a shop saying, this has a bad darkness. So what would any intelligent person do at this point in time when all of these people that share this box give it right back to you? You take it home.
Oh, absolutely. Because, you know, why would you not do that, right? So just bring it into your house. Yeah, because, you know, that makes the most sense.
I honestly don't. Well, this is British, right? This is over in England?
No, because he got it from, it's here in the States. Because he got it from, the estate was in Oregon. The estate sale where he picked it up at was in Oregon.
Oh, okay. All right. Damn. I was really hoping I was going to make fun of the British on this one. But
well, we can make fun of the British anyway, if you want to.
That's true. I mean,
we'll sneak that in.
I mean,
yeah.
But, you know, it just would have helped.
Right.
So he took it home and began having nightmares. And I'm going to read this verbatim because this is how he described it. I find myself walking with a friend, usually someone I know well and trust at some point in the dream. I find myself looking into the eyes of the person that I am with. It is then that I realize that there is something different, something evil looking back at me. At that point in my dream, the person I am with changes into what can only be described as the most gruesome, demonic-looking hag that I have ever seen. This hag proceeds then to beat the living tar out of me.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I'm sorry. I just get this vision in my head of what that would be like. And it's really weird, I guess you could say.
I would agree. I think that... I don't get, okay, so if a Dybbuk's not a demon, I don't get where he's seeing pure evil and like this ungodly old hag. Unless that's just the way that the entity that's in the box wanted to show him, because he smelled the cat urine and he's not the one who can help. So maybe it's a thing like, pass me along, because, you know, don't keep me for 100 years. You know what I mean? Because you can't help me. So I'm going to make your life miserable until you pass me along till I can find somebody I'm compatible with. If that makes sense.
No, it definitely does make sense. I was thinking maybe that's because this thing is malicious. It obviously has to atone for something.
Right.
And it could definitely be maybe it's a representation of how this Dybbuk sees themselves.
Could
perhaps.
Be.
And because they didn't say pure evil. It said something evil looking back at me. And it's gruesome, demonic looking hag that I've ever seen.
Right.
How many hag, like gruesome, demonic looking hags has this guy seen?
Zero until he saw this one.
So it's pretty low bar.
So I would say that, right. So on a scale of 1 to 10, it's probably a solid 2.
Gruesome, demonic looking hags.
Right. Right. Because I'm sure Hollywood can create a couple of demonic hags that'll exceed what he saw.
Maybe. He never really went into details as to beyond that, as to what it actually looked like.
Right. But I will tell you this, right? So the thing that I found interesting was that he talked about after having that dream, waking up with welts and bruises and red marks on his body, which I found to be interesting, because if it was psychosomatic, then he would have to be able to materialize those injuries himself through his own body. And I don't know about that. I don't know if I can stretch it that far.
Yeah.
So how would you explain that, right? I mean, that happened to, you know, that happened in real life, obviously, you know, that happened to Steve. I mean, not with the Dybbuk box. I know we're going a little off thing, but, you know, from that investigation and when he quit, I mean, I took the pictures. I saw exactly what had happened to him. So, yeah, you know, it happens.
Oh, it definitely happens.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if it perhaps, while this person is sleeping, you know, a spirit, you know, I can't say any spirit, but any negative spirit, you know, because there's tons of clients that are dealing with the paranormal. Well, they'll wake up after having a nightmare and they'll have handprints, you know, all over them.
Right.
You know, bruises that suddenly show up.
Right.
So, I mean, I almost wonder if it's maybe like a dual attack, like they're physically attacking them while at the same time invading their dreams and like doing stuff to, I don't want to say to their head, but making them dream as to this actually happening to them, even though it actually kind of is.
Right. So they're basically guiding their dreams. It's almost like they're in control of that person's, where that dream is going to head to.
Yeah. Which, you know, would suck.
That would suck, yes.
But here's the other thing, though. When we were talking about whether the jasmine flowers is you can help me and cat urine is not.
Right.
One of the times that he had this nightmare, he woke up at 4:30 in the morning, the feeling of someone breathing on his neck and the smell of jasmine flowers.
Yeah.
And he saw a shadow figure lurking down the hall.
Right.
So, but here, I guess here's my question with that one then. So supposedly this Dybbuk is trapped to this object in this box. But how, because one of the things that he did is he started seeing shadow figures all around his house.
Right.
If this thing can leave the box and project itself as a shadow figure, you know, in your home or whatever, then how is it trapped to the box?
Well, that's
or,
good.
Or is that, or is that more like an anchor?
That's a good question, because I was going to say on that exact point, right, the granddaughter of the original owner of it said that the original woman kept the box in her sewing room and nobody was ever allowed to open it. So when Kevin opened it, did he not necessarily release the spirit from the material object, but did he give it the freedom to travel within a certain radius, let's say? But you're right, that anchor point would be the box. So it was able to get out of the box because the box was opened, but it can't leave the box until it accomplishes what it needs to accomplish.
Gotcha.
That's what I would say. Yeah.
The great thing is he had, when these nightmares started, he actually had family and his girlfriend come over, you know, just regular sister, brother, brother's wife came to stay all night. All of them have that same dream.
Yes.
And then, unbeknownst until later, Kevin's girlfriend, while she had it, also had that same dream.
Right.
So the dream is obviously important.
Oh, yeah, obviously, right.
Just wish we had some sort of, like, there's nothing in the story that says that anybody figured out
what it meant. Right. And I think that this topic's going to come up again down in future shows, because we'll go back to it as a reference point. But I would say that if I was an odds maker, if you put five people in a home, let me say it this way first. If you put five people in a home, the chances of them all having the same exact dream has got to be astronomical, right? So backtrack that a second. Even if you had predisposed them to the concept of the Dybbuk box potentially being malicious, and then they went to bed, you might have five, you might all dream about the box, but it would be different dreams, right? I mean, it would not be the same dream, you know, because why would you consider it to be evil, number one, right? Why would you have this demonic hag thing show up? And why looking at, and it starts off as somebody that you trust, then you look into their eyes and you see something evil, and then it turns into this really grotesque hag.
Yeah.
So let's break there, because I got something important to bring up on that topic right after the break.
I was actually just going to do that, because I was like, all right, we're going to go to commercial break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the next steps of what happened with this Dybbuk box. Because the story does not end with Mr. Kevin Manis.
No, it does not.
So we will be back. You are listening to The Odyssey Files on Para X.
Rhett, where are you going?
I'm going back to the paranormal view, back where I belong.
Please, take me with you.
No, I'm through with everything here. I want to see if there's something left in life I haven't explored. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, Rhett, don't run to them. They talk about ghosts and hauntings, UFOs and all kinds of supernatural scary stuff.
You'll never understand, will you, Scarlet?
No!
Well, that's your misfortune.
Rhett, if you go, where shall I go? What shall I do?
Frankly, my dear... Line?
Oh, you gotta be kidding.
That's The Paranormal View with your host, Henry Foister, Jeffrey Gould, and Barbara Duncan. Every Saturday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, exclusively on the Para-X Radio Network.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal. Para-X.
Oh, you have UFOs, people, cryptids.
All I think on the call is just think if you listen to the words of Tara X.
And during the few moments that we have left, we want to talk right down to earth in a language that everybody here can easily understand.
Your source for everything paranormal, Para X.
Hey, it's Chris Fleming. More painful than a Tyrannosaurus Rex stepping on your testicle. Listen to Dave and Mike on Odyssey Files.
And we are back. We are talking about the history and the story of the original Dybbuk box. And so Kevin Manis had all of these, experiences. And he finally, of all things, puts it on eBay.
Isn't that just a dumping ground for America right there?
And I believe he actually posted it as haunted wine box or something
that. Or something haunted. Something to that effect, right? I don't think he called it a Dybbuk box. I think he put it up there as a, you know, collectible antique wine box that's haunted.
Yeah. It was bought by, of all people, a University of Missouri college student in June of 2003. So Kevin Manis had this roughly about 2 years.
Yeah.
And the student's name, Losef Netsky. Love that last name.
Me too.
After 8 months of having the box and himself and his roommates suffering insomnia and phantom illnesses in the presence of this item, sold it again, and sold it to a man by the name of Jason Haxton, who I believe he was a professor, wasn't he?
Yeah. Professor of, I didn't jot that down, but yes, I don't, and it was at some small college here. Hold on. Director of the Museum of Osteopathic Medicine in Kirksville, Missouri.
That's right. That's right.
Yep.
I did read that. And he didn't want a gift. He didn't want something wonderful to place on a shelf or whatever to hold wine. He wanted to study this box.
Correct. Yep.
And naturally, he also did not suffer well with this thing. Amongst things, he, like Kevin Manis, experienced welts and hives when he first had the box. He didn't say anything about nightmares, though.
Nope, I didn't see anything either, but the correlation with the welts and the hives is enough to sell me that something's going on.
Well, yeah, no, I was just found that interesting that they had the same physical reaction, but not like the mental type thing where Kevin Manis had these nightmares and woke up with these welts and bruises and whatnot. And here, you know, Jason Haxton, who is trying to study this box, experienced the welts and hives, but there's no mention of the nightmares. And he also experienced coughing up blood and choking.
Yeah, that's always fun.
Yes, very much so. There are a couple things that were weird. He said touching it almost puts it into a liquid state. Don't know how that works.
Nope. And got me on that one. Yep.
He said it had an anti-aging effect on him. So there you go, ladies. If you want to remain young forever, buy Dybbuk box.
Absolutely. It's the haunted, it's the spiritual version of Botox.
That is awesome. It's the Botox box. Oh, new coin phrase, the Botox box. Rolls off your tongue.
Yeah.
He was also seeing strange lights and shadows, same as Kevin Manis.
Right.
But the one thing that I think Mr. Haxon was doing that nobody else bothered to do was study the contents that was actually inside the box.
Right. Right. And so, and that's what I wanted to touch on. So I thought that extremely interesting. And this will go back to kind of what we talked about 2 weeks ago too, where I'll bring it full circle. So, when he opened the box and started studying it, he found that it contained two 1920s pennies, a lock of blonde hair bound with a cord, a lock of blackish brown hair bound with a cord, a small statue engraved with the Hebrew word shalom, a small golden wine goblet, one dried rosebud, and a single candle holder with four octopus-shaped legs. It's an eclectic mix.
Yes, it is. And I'm almost wondering if this was intentional. Like, it almost, just because of the hair bound with cord.
Yeah, that's where I was going. Yep.
It almost sounds ritualistic.
It goes right back to 2 weeks ago when we were talking about DNA and putting DNA, your own DNA, into something to try to conjure something.
Yes, but in this case, is it more not so much conjuring as trapping?
Well, right, and that's a good question. You know, the original, you know, I don't remember her name, but her granddaughter's name was like Javelina or something like that. But the thing, okay, so the thing that I touched on, and we might as well throw it in here while I'm, because I've got it written down, so this is a good point to bring it up. I kind of took a look that maybe because of the locks of hair, the pennies, everything that was in there was like a personal object, right? So I looked at it as maybe what if it was a mourning box? Not mourning like AM, but mourning as in somebody died. So what if the lady who owned it used it as a grief box, right? She lived to be 103. So what if for, who the hell knows, 80 years, whatever, 50 years, who cares? She poured all of this grief into this box and these personal items. Maybe it was a lock of hair from a child that she had that died at a young age. You know, something to that effect. Maybe the other items in there were from Jewish religion that were important symbolisms for her faith in the Jewish belief. So what if she infused this box with so much grief that the box took a life of its own?
It's very possible. But then why would it be... Because grief stems from, in my opinion, from love. I mean, you don't grieve Correct. Over people you hate. Nope. You don't grieve over people you just don't like.
Right.
You grieve over people that you love.
Right.
So if she's pouring all of this grief into this box, why would it turn malicious? I mean, you would think that it would be almost the exact same way. It would be more of a mourning type, like sad presence, as opposed to malicious. I'm almost wondering, as you were talking, I kind of had this idea pop in my head. Going back to this in some way was used to trap a spirit. I mean, you could almost say right along your same lines, perhaps let's just say it started with this woman, this 103-year-old woman.
Right.
And let's say she's into the occult and she has a dying husband, a dying son, you know, who daughter, you know, family member.
Right.
Loved one who is, she cannot stand to be without. And so she creates this object or uses this stuff as a way of trapping the soul of this loved one when they passed so they would never have to really be without them.
So basically, yeah, right. And we've talked about that in the past too. So basically you're tethering the spirit to you or to, you know, to your life so it can't leave and go to its next stage. See, you know, yeah, absolutely. And you got two different colors hair.
Yes.
And you got to remember she was in the Holocaust. So what if, like, what if her child or her husband, like you said, was being taken to on the gas train or sent to one of the ovens? What if she took that clip of hair as something to basically trap them to stay with her, their spirit, because she knew they were, it was inevitable that they were going to be killed.
And if that is the case, and I obviously I can't say if it is or not, I don't think anybody will ever be able to say whether that is the case or not.
No, right.
I can understand, especially if it was done without their permission, I could understand how over time that would lead to one very pissed off spirit.
Right. I would agree.
I want to pass on. I want to go over. You are keeping me here.
Right.
You have trapped me in this wooden box to whatever object it is.
Right.
I probably over time would be very, I would become malicious as well.
Right.
I mean, because they even said that one of the things about the Dybbuk that could have happened is it's a human spirit that somehow gets corrupted and these bad emotions manifest and they become what we consider to be demons.
Correct. That's our interpretation, is demons. Because even going back to old Jewish lore, even back to the 1600s, where some of these original things and topics were coming from, because they were speaking about things like that way back in Jewish history and Jewish lore, you know, all the way back in 1600, but they weren't considering them to be demons. They also just were saying upset or malicious entities. Negative. But to me, you know, and to you, a negative entity is not a demon. Obviously, that's two totally different things.
Yes, 100%. But I don't think it's a far stretch to think that human spirits can corrupt themselves so much they become maybe not so much demons like inhuman spirits,
right?
But they could become demon like.
Correct, a demon like negative entity. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Right, and so let's take that back to what we talked about earlier. If they are able to control your dreams and lead you down a path that they want you to go, then I don't think it would be very difficult for them to materialize and show you something that they know is intentionally going to scare you. Right? So I don't think it'd be difficult for them to project their image based on the fact they're already leading your dreams. So they might already have been able to see what you're afraid of. And if that's the case, and they don't want to be with you, like we talked about, right? They want to be passed along because you can't help them. Then they show you something that scares you. They know is going to scare you because they already know that that's something you're afraid of. They've already seen it somehow.
Yeah, but I completely understand what you're saying, and I agree with you on that one. But this one just doesn't seem to be like that would be the case, because nobody was scared, because it was obviously, you know, most gruesome,
right,
demonic looking hag they've ever seen in their lives. But what is really the point then of starting it out with walking with somebody that you trust and then morphing into this? You know, dream, especially recurring dreams, are supposed to be symbolic in some way, especially if they're being led by an entity. I'm almost wondering if that's the case, if maybe it is symbolizing what we were talking about before, where this Dybbuk was with somebody that they trusted, and then that person morphed into somebody that they weren't.
Right.
And then beat the shit out of them.
Basically. Yeah. I mean, and where does the beating come in at? I mean, why would you, I mean, I suppose, right, because you're just a pissed off entity because you're trapped in this box because you've been tethered to it. So now you're angry. You have the opportunity to beat the hell out of somebody. So you just beat the hell out of them just because you need to release some of that emotion.
Perhaps.
Perhaps,
I
mean, yeah.
Obviously, physically harming somebody is an act of anger. You know, it's an act of passion.
Right.
Yeah. But there's a couple of things. We only got 10 minutes left, so I do want to get to this. The funny thing was, besides what Haxton was doing, he wanted to study this box. He took an academic and even paranormal approach to trying to understand what was making this box a quote-unquote tick. You know, he enlisted the help of scientists, paranormalists, Kabbalists, and even Wiccans to try to put this box into a more manageable state so he could keep it.
Right.
He said he believed the force contained in the cabin is neutral, but plays off of who comes in contact with it. Now that's interesting.
That is interesting. So you'd have to feed your own energy in it to turn it on, basically.
Its ultimate goal is to understand and reveal truth, and that it was seeking the right owner to help it.
Which is kind of where we've been going.
Yep, yep. Pretty much. But what I find interesting, though, is he kept the box secure in a CACIA?
Yep.
Wood arc lined with 24 karat gold.
Yep.
To keep it subdued. How do you even figure that out?
That's a good question. I mean, obviously, if you had that whole team of scientists and everybody else, it probably was trial and error. You know, let's line it with copper. Let's line it with this. Let's line it with that. And all of a sudden, they found that gold had an effect on it, I guess. So they went and got the purest form that they could, which would be 24 karat. He didn't cheap out and go 10 karat, you notice.
No.
I mean, he went 24 karat gold.
But then he more recently admitted he put it into a military-grade shockproof container and buried it.
Right. Someplace somewhere, where it'd be safe. Yep.
Yeah, someplace where nobody would ever find it. And this is what I wanted to get to. Because, of course he did, Mr. Zach Bagans went ahead and there's been a couple different stories as to how he acquired it. Some say he bought it. Others say Mr. Jason Haxton gave it to him. But the original Dybbuk box is now in his idiotic haunted museum in Las Vegas.
And if you want to see it, you can, but you have to sign a waiver that clearly states that if that box afflicts you in any way, shape, or form, that Zach is not responsible for it.
It's not his fault. Right. Shocker.
Right.
Fucking hate Bagans. This kind of goes back to this last Halloween when he made a huge hype move that during their live, Ghost Adventure show for Halloween, he was going to open this Dybbuk box at this live event, this haunted location, live on the air.
Right.
And I had multiple people come up, message me and be like, did you see what he's going to do? And I'm like, well, it doesn't surprise me that he would say he's going to do that. I'm like, he may be a dumbass, but he's not stupid.
Right.
I'm like, chances are he's never going to open that box.
Right.
He's using this to hype up a show because everybody wants to see him get afflicted by the Dybbuk, which I find hilarious, by the way. But there's no way. And then, of course, the day after this thing aired, I'm on Twitter and I see this message by him. Oh, my apologies to the people who were watching last night. With all the activity, I couldn't open it. It wasn't safe. And I'm like, ah, yeah, you never were ever going to open that box.
Correct. Yep, I agree with you. I don't think he was.
Yeah, if there's anything that I will give Mr. Baggins complete credit for, it's marketing.
Oh, he's an entertainer, and he knows how to hype people up. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was just thinking, was it last night? Might have been last night. That it's almost irritating to me that the only person from that entire show that I follow on Twitter is Aaron.
Yep.
And even that's pretty much coming to an end. I just, because every single episode now that comes on, he's like, oh my God, I can't wait. Do you guys see it? It was so scary. And I'm like, how long ago? You have been on the show longer than I have been investigating the paranormal.
Right.
And you still get scared?
Right.
No. You know, well, you're not.
Right, exactly. And that, we've talked about that hundreds of times. I mean, I've watched a couple recent episodes just because of the location. And that's really why I watch a show. I'm kind of jealous of the locations they get to go to. So I want to see the location. I don't care who's there. I want to see the location, right? So I thought to myself, I'm watching a couple shows recently, and I think I'm watching them, and I'm like, could this be more hyped up for over-dramatization than, you know, everybody's screaming, everybody's jumping, everybody's running back down the hallway yelling, oh my God. I'm thinking to myself, haven't we talked about this hundreds of times? If you walk into a situation and you're asking for something to happen and it happens, don't shit your pants. Stay in the room and experience what's happening, because that's what you just asked for.
Yes.
I don't get it. I don't get that. That's the whole Hollywood effect. That's the whole producer, director, whatever. That's their power to make you run around and scream like an idiot so that the people at home go, oh my God, well, if Zach just took off running, it must have been scarier than hell. I can't even believe it.
Yeah, they are the male version of Most Haunted.
Good God, yeah. Well, that's a great, oh, I like that, yeah.
It's the U.S. version of Most Haunted.
It's the U.S. male version of Most Haunted, yes.
So,
that's beautiful.
But yeah, so Zach now owns... This box, and
it has a recent victim. Did you see that when you were doing your research?
I did not.
Okay,
For some reason, it does not sound like I didn't know about it. So I wonder if maybe I like read a sentence about it, but right. There was no details to it.
Okay, so real quick, and then we'll wrap up the show. So Post Malone, the singer, the kind of outrageous singer, he was invited to an event where the box was like debuted or whatever you want to say.
Right.
And he actually was in the same room and in close contact with it. And he's had like a whole string of bad luck. And they're saying that it was because of the box.
So one of the, any parapsychologist will probably say, and somebody has, especially if they're a skeptic of this box.
Right.
And this will be the really quick counterpoint, is that these people are so primed now.
Right.
That bad things are going to happen to them when they get near this box. That it happens. And right. they blame it on the box, and the legend grows.
Correct.
There's a statement, there's an old saying that comes to mind that I've been thinking about lately, and that is, if a man is convinced they are going to die today, he will find a way to make it happen.
Yep.
And you know, you almost have to go back to, unfortunately, The Matrix, where she's like, you know, don't worry about that vase, and he's like, what vase? And he hits it, and he's like, she's like, I said don't worry about it. She's like, but here's what's going to, you know, really
blow your mind.
Blow your mind is, would you have still broken it if I had not said something?
Right.
So, I mean, are these people just being primed now? They're like, this is a Dybbuk box. Bad luck is going to follow you if you get near it.
Right.
Oh, I don't believe, you know, but at some place they do, because they just want to be prideful and that it's not going to affect them.
Right.
But then one bad thing happens and
they point their finger right back. Right.
And now their entire mentality has changed.
Exactly.
So that is it for us tonight. Cause I need to get off the air. So we will be back next week with another wonderful, wonderful topic. Everybody have a great week and we'll see you then.
Yep. See you next week.
Hello, everyone. This is Ken Bogle. You know, you hear so many great moments during each and every episode of The Odyssey Files with Dave and Mike. But if I had to really choose my favorite moment, it would have to be when the show was over.